And welcome to Food Integrity Now, advocating integrity in our global food supply. I'm Susan Wright, and I'm waiting for my co-host, Carol Gervais, who hopefully will be joining us shortly. Matt Spaeth will not be joining us today. Our website is www.foodintegritynow.org, and you can find out more about us and also listen to any of our archive shows, which I think are close to having 50 shows archived on our site with some pretty amazing information. Today on our show, we are going to be talking about the newly released documentary, Farmageddon, which was released last week in both Washington and L.A. Our guests today are Sally Fallon, who is the founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and is currently on the board of directors. She is the author of Nourishing Traditions, the cookbook that challenges politically correct nutrition, and she has also co-authored many other books. We also have Liz Reitzig. Liz is the president of the Maryland Independent Consumer and Farmers Association and secretary of the National Independent Consumer Farmers Association. Both organizations lobby for farmers' rights and for access to real food. She is also a chapter leader for the Weston A. Price Foundation. Both Sally and Liz are featured in the movie Farmageddon. Welcome, Sally. Welcome,
Hi.
Liz.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hi,
it's
thank
good
you.
To have you. Well, it looks like the release of the film, Farmageddon, was a success. It got a great review on the Washington Post. Giving you 3 out of 4 stars, giving that movie. So what has the reception been like for you? Have you heard much, or what are the comments that you're getting from people?
Well, I think the great value of this documentary is its shock value. People don't understand what's happening and how the government agencies, particularly FDA and state health agencies, treat small farms so unfairly, and how difficult it is to fight back when you are the subject of raids with pointed guns. And we're just talking about food, folks, and small farms and small distributors are being treated like criminals in this country. And I do think that those are the kind of comments that I've gotten back. Oh, I had no idea. I never realized this was going on. So the film is, that's its great and lasting value, is waking people up to what's going on.
Yeah, I really agree with Sally on that. And additionally, people find it very moving. It's really compelling to hear the stories from these farmers who are being attacked. It's one thing, like, if I tell somebody in my family or if I tell a friend, oh, you know, this happened. But then for that same person to go and hear the story directly from the farmer, it adds a whole new depth and a whole new meaning to those stories. And it really makes people upset.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like something, you know, when I watch the clips and I watch farmers talk about their experiences, is this America? That's what.
Yeah, right. Is this America or is this, you know, some communist country?
Right. What has been happening since the start of the film, as it was being created? Have more of these things been happening? I'm sure that there's been other incidents maybe that haven't been documented, or?
Well, I think we have a few. We have had 2 crackdowns on artisan cheesemakers, actually 3 in the last year. And they've all resulted in a complete shutdown of their operations. And for infractions that a big company would just get a little warning letter for. The small guys are treated with a great unfairness and, you know, much more stringent application of the regulations. And then we have, maybe Liz would like to talk about our farmer in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, actually, there's a story about Dan Allgaier, and he is an Amish farmer in Pennsylvania. And his story really illustrates the extent to which the FDA is willing to go to come after the small producers. He has a group of buyers in the D.C. metro area, of which I am one, and he's been supplying dairy products to us for several years now. And this is all, you know, private arrangements. We know the farmer. We've actually contracted with him to get these products. And what the FDA did, unbeknownst to us, is they infiltrated our buying group about a year and a half ago with somebody, basically a spy for the FDA. They created an alias, and for a year and a half now, the FDA has been conducting an undercover sting operation on this farmer and the buying group that he supplies to, including about 14 months ago, they sent armed federal marshals, state troopers, the whole deal. They sent them to his farm at 5 a.m. and to inspect and look through his freezers and look at his coolers. This is armed federal marshals following him around his farm. You know, he can't have breakfast with his family. He can't do the morning prayer with his family. Didn't even get to milk the cows that morning. They're just following him and harassing him, intimidating him. He didn't answer any questions. He basically said, you know, I'm not going to answer anything. But from that, subsequent to that, they continued to conduct this undercover sting operation, resulting in a notice to him of permanent injunction. So they're basically telling him to stop or else. And we don't really know what that or else is yet, but they're, you know, further intimidation. I mean, who does an undercover sting operation against a farmer for transporting dairy products to consumers who are begging for them? This is our FDA doing this.
Yeah, right. This is Carol Gervais. I'm finally on here. I had a few technical difficulties. Sorry about that. But so these raids that they're conducting, how are they showing justifiable cause?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you call justified. The FDA has a regulation that does not allow raw milk across state lines for human consumption, but this is not a public thing going on. This is a private arrangement, and just as you don't need a liquor license in a private club, we are arguing that you don't, you know, we don't need any permits or anything for this. Because these are private contractual arrangements.
Right. So when they're confronted with you know, what you just said to me, what is their explanation? Or do they have an explanation? Or is it just, you know, how is it explained?
I'll let you take that one, Liz.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the explanation is, what they keep repeating over and over is that people at the FDA say that raw milk is inherently dangerous and that nobody should drink raw milk for any reason ever, and that they are doing this for public safety.
Hmm. So what are the studies? I mean, do they have proof?
Let me just say this. The FDA has a PowerPoint which purports to show how dangerous raw milk is, and we have gone over that PowerPoint with a fine-tooth comb. In that PowerPoint, they present 15 studies purporting to show that raw milk caused illness, and we pretty much demolish all those studies, showing that they were very biased and actually didn't prove that raw milk caused the illness that they said it did. We have recently put some numbers together. We finally found out that there's anywhere from 9 to 15 million raw milk drinkers in this country. So now we can do the math, and you are just so much more likely to get sick from other foods than you are from raw milk, that there is no justifiable reason for saying that raw milk is inherently dangerous the way they do.
The other thing that I find really, really fishy about this is that a lot of these farmers, when they're raided, they have equipment confiscated, you know, not just the products, which cost them money, but equipment. And even when there's nothing shown to be wrong, they are not compensated.
It's they don't get their equipment
damaging.
Back. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
We had a raid on an Amish farmer a few years ago, and they, you know, they went around picking off parts to their cheese processing and milking equipment that, you know, would be very difficult for them to replace. It was just total malicious destruction, you know, just by taking key parts to their equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like they know they don't really have a leg to stand on, so they just try to tear them apart financially.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and some of these
farmers
have been raided. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just curious, and I'm sure you both have opinions on this. So what do you feel the intent really is?
Well, I feel the intent really is to get rid of the small farmer at the behest of the very consolidated monopolistic food industry, and particularly milk. Only four companies in this country control over 80% of the milk supply, and their best interest is to keep the price they have to pay to the farmer low. And they do not want farmers to have another way of marketing their milk, because then they would have to pay higher prices.
Well, I agree with Sally, and I would also add to that. I think, you know, there's a few people in positions in our bureaucracies who want to force their worldview on everybody else. And that's what they're doing through force, through coercion, intimidation, all of it. They have this mindset that people should not drink raw milk, and so they're using force, guns, federal marshals, everything to impose that worldview on all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, so how is your organization, Liz, how are you guys dealing with this, and how are you countering this? Is it just lawsuits, or, you know, what's the strategy?
Well, we're actually primarily a lobbying group, so we do on the state level, the state organization, we lobby on the state level and educate legislators, lawmakers about it. Of course, we deal with the bureaucracies as well. And then on the federal level, the same thing. There's a lot of education going on, and then there's lobbying about this, where we actually, people from around the country, you know, talk to legislators and educate them about the benefits of fresh milk, why it's important, and then more importantly, just about what's going on with our farmers, like what we see in Farmageddon, and how their position as legislators, how they can help with that.
Are you having much, or are you getting much support from any of the congressmen or representatives?
Well, on the state level, yes. On the federal level, there's still such a huge gap there. And I feel like we're still working on the education of it. You know, they've got to know what's happening. And for the most part, like when we go in and meet with staffers about what's happening to our farmers, like the first reaction is just complete disbelief. They just don't realize what's happening. And that's why a film like Farmageddon is going to help so much, because instead of just going in there and spending 5 minutes or 10 minutes telling them, this is what's happening to our farmers, and you say, look, there's a whole documentary about this. Here are the highlights. And, you know, that gives them an opportunity to use the movie for follow-up. And it also adds a lot of credence to what we're saying when we go in there.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Seeing
and how... Yes, and I'm wondering, you know, the movie has opened in a couple of cities. How widespread? I mean, what's the distribution going to be on this movie?
Well, my understanding is they opened it in three cities, New York, they've opened it in L.A. and Washington. I believe New York is coming soon, and if it's a success in these cities, then we can expect to see it nationwide in independent theaters. Here's hoping. I mean, that would be really huge for this movement.
Yeah. You know, is it one of those movies, too, like where if somebody buys a copy of it, can they copy it and redistribute it? I know some of the documentaries that are educational like this, that you can do that, but I'm not sure if that's true with Farmageddon.
That I don't know. I think the answer at first is no, because they want people to see it in the theaters. But I'm sure eventually they will want as many people to see this as possible.
Right.
So my understanding is that Kristen Canty, she's the maker of this film, her strategy is to try to get as many people to go to the theaters to see it as possible so it can get a nationwide viewing, and then only later open it up to private viewings and copying and so forth.
Oh, okay. So, you know, you pretty much can only see it in those three cities right now.
Right now, but hopefully it will be nationwide.
Yeah. That we're all rooting for that, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to get you back on the show, so that we could do our little part to assist.
You know, I often say, I sometimes sound like a broken record to myself, but the 1700s was the century of political rights, and the 1800s were women's rights, and the 1900s was civil rights. And I believe the real flashpoint, shall we say, of the 21st century will be food and farmer rights. And the tyranny is always going to be couched in terms of protecting the public's health. And I can tell you that the people involved and the people who are in these industries really believe that every single morsel of food is potentially hazardous and needs to be zapped or pasteurized or, you know, killed in some way before it reaches the consumer's table. And, of course, these don't work. You know, we get heat-resistant pathogens and, you know, all sorts of byproducts of these techniques that are harmful to us. And it shows just a real distrust of nature and nature's ability to nourish us.
Right. You know, Sally, I think our listeners might enjoy, some of our listeners may not know some of the benefits that you claim and the studies have shown regarding raw milk. So perhaps you could just educate us just a little bit in that area.
Yes, and first let me say that our strategy, I mean, Liz's strategy is the lobbying, and she has done a fabulous job there. Our strategy as a national organization is education, and we just are working on this by creating as many people passionate about raw milk as we can. And we do this by showing the science. And we have put together a large PowerPoint, it's at realmilk.com, in which we list every study that we know about showing the that has been carried out on raw milk, and they all show benefits. The early studies with animals and humans showed that raw milk was better for growth compared to pasteurized, built stronger teeth, the longer and denser bones, was better for fighting infection. In premature babies giving raw mother's milk, it was much better than pasteurized for their growth and development. And in recent years, we've had studies showing that raw milk is very helpful in treating asthma or preventing asthma and allergies. And we also know that the pasteurization process kills or diminishes the actions of a lot of the vitamins in the milk. So all of this is in that PowerPoint. And our strategy has been to kind of just say, here are the facts. This is what the science says. this is what we know about the safety of raw milk. We know about the components in raw milk that build the immune system and kill pathogens. And here it is. And we give the references, and then people can decide for themselves.
Well, you know, if people want to look at this PowerPoint, can you give that website again?
Yes, it's realmilk.com. At realmilk.com, and right on the splash page are our most important documents. The first one is a 4-page summary. And I love the way it ends, because the last thing in that summary is a picture of a vending machine in Italy where you can go up and put a coin in and get a glass of raw milk. There are over 1,500 of these vending machines in Italy, and they're also in many other countries in Europe. And so, hey, people, if the Europeans don't think this is a problem, you know, why does our government think it's such a problem? So that's one of the documents. The big PowerPoint is there, our refutation of the FDA and our refutation of a number of other anti-raw milk documents are there on that splash page.
Okay, that will be a great source for people who want to learn more about this.
Yes, and that's what I suggest. Don't believe me. Don't believe what I'm saying. Don't just, you know, rush out and say I'm going to do this. Read the literature first, so you know why we are so confident when we say raw milk is very safe and it is far more nutritious than pasteurized milk.
Yeah,
how long has it been? How long has it been since we've had pasteurization? How old is pasteurization?
Well, it started out in the late 1800s. It was proposed as a solution to what was called the milk problem. This was during the period when we had tremendous crowding and filth in the inner cities, and the death rate for babies was 50%. And it was blamed on the milk. Now, certainly the milk contributed to this, because the milk came from absolutely filthy cows in confinement dairies being fed the swill from whiskey production in the inner cities. And this milk was so white and pale that they added chalk to it to make it look, you know, like milk. So not only was the milk filthy, it had no nutritional value either. Pasteurization was proposed as one solution. The other solution that was proposed was the certified raw milk movement, which brought clean, tested raw milk in from this country into the cities for the children. And both of these coexisted for many years, and the people proposing pasteurization admitted that clean certified raw milk was fine and just as safe. The big push for pasteurization began in the 1940s. It actually started in 1943 with an article in Coronet magazine, and which described a town called Crossroads, USA, where a whole bunch of people, like a third of the population, died of undulant fever from raw milk. The only problem with the article is it was entirely fictitious. There was no town called Crossroads, and no outbreak, and no deaths. And yet this article was repeated in the Reader's Digest, and that started the real push for pasteurization. The first mandatory pasteurization laws came in 1948 in the state of Michigan, and then many other states followed suit.
Well, we are going to be right back and talk about this most interesting subject, but for now we're going to take a few minutes to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Experiencing anxiety, anger, depression, or low self-esteem? Do you beat yourself up or sabotage what you truly want to achieve? Hi, this is Jeannie Smith, and at Open Heart Healing, I combine counseling, Gestalt therapy, and Tai Chi energy work to assist those who truly desire to bring quality and joy back into their lives. My office is located on South Perry Street here in Castle Rock. Call me for a free consultation at 303-660-6373. Again, that's 303-660-6373, or visit me at openhearthealing.com.
Thank you. Linda Masterson, Soul Purpose Astrologer, works with astrological tools and with guides in the non-physical to assist ones in knowing their soul purpose. Important in this process is identification of significant blockages. In each session, tools are provided for working with self to clear resistance and free talents, skills, and abilities to fuller expression. The goal is to take responsibility for and to accelerate the healing process. Phone sessions are offered by Linda. Please visit Linda at lindamasterson.com or call 808-651-0307. Again, that's 808-651-0307.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We are visiting today with Liz Wright. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Is it Reitzig?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, great. And Sally Fallon, and we also have Susan Wright on the phone, and we're talking about the movie Farmageddon, which was just recently released and in Washington and Los Angeles, and we understand it's going to be released this week or next week in New York. So if you're in any of those areas, I highly recommend you see this important documentary. So what happens next with this movement? And this is a question for Liz. You know, are you just continuing the lobbying, or are you continuing to film any raids, or what's going on with it?
Well, I think it's really a several-pronged approach. You know, what Sally's doing and the Weston Price Foundation, they're doing great job educating people and getting people so interested in fresh and local and direct from the farm foods. And when you have a whole board of passionate moms who are out there demanding this food, you know, that's a whole nother force to reckon with. And that's what, you know, groups like the FDA and the big dairy industry, that's what they're not counting on, but that's what they're getting. You know, I've got five children now, and I started this several years ago.
One just
this
born,
is how
by the way.
I feed my children. Pardon?
I say one just born, by the way.
Right. I have a two-week-old baby.
Yeah.
But, you know, this, like, you don't get between moms and their kids. And when we're feeding our kids, we want the best possible for them. This is what's best. And so it's one thing for the FDA to go after individual farms and farmers and try to pick them off. But when each of those farmers has 100 angry moms behind them, then it becomes a completely different story. And that's what they're starting to deal with a little bit more now. And with these ongoing raids, you know, now every time they go after a farm, they're going after 100 to 500 moms.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the whole prong of this movement. That's the educational and just getting the mass consumers to start supporting local farmers. And then, of course, there's the political angle as well, which, you know, I'm always encouraging more people to get involved in, but it is only one of the approaches to take. And I think it's an important one because we've got to lay the foundation so that when the laws do change, they don't change back overnight. We've got to lay that foundation, build up the education of the people, of our lawmakers. We've got to kind of shift this whole paradigm of what's happening right now, you know, that it's acceptable to go after these farms, shift that to it's absolutely not acceptable to go after these farms.
Yes, and
yeah.
I think it's got to be such an outcry, just as it eventually became not acceptable to have separate facilities for different races. It just was not acceptable, and I think we need to create the same kind of climate here for small farmers. It's this kind of persecution is just not acceptable.
Right. And I think so many people are unaware of what is happening. And I think that's a wonderful thing about Farmageddon, is that it will bring the awareness out there. And I think some people may be shocked because a lot of people believe that our government is totally here to take care of us, and that the FDA is here to make sure we're safe and we don't get any bad food. But in my circle of friends, we know differently. But that's part of the reason why we do this show, so we can educate people on what is really happening.
Yeah, and what we have got ourselves into in the pursuit of a diet that's not going to cause any foodborne illness. We still have the foodborne illness, but we have a diet that causes not immediate illness, but chronic disease that kills you slowly.
Right.
And
right.
There doesn't seem to be anything wrong with that, according to the FDA. You know, you can have as many toxins and bad fats and sweeteners in your food as you want. And those of us trying to have foods that are not that way are just viewed as kind of kooks and quacks, and you know.
Yeah.
The scary thing is that I think people are conditioned, because it is so slow, these diseases that have developed from eating this food, is that people are conditioned to think that this disease level is normal.
That's right.
And that's part of the education is to, you know, get people to be connected again in their minds of what the quality of food they eat and disease level in society. This is not normal.
Right. And, you know, that's my understanding is that's the greatest the strongest way that an idea is born, is it's introduced slowly and then people just start accepting it and then it just becomes normal. You know, and diabetes is normal now, and cancer is normal, and actually even being depressed is normal.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of psychologists.
I keep coming back to this. There's an underlying sense of fear that nature is hostile, that the processes of the body are imperfect and need to be helped along with drugs and medicines, that our food is dangerous and needs to be treated with high-tech processes and everything. So there's a whole sense of alienation from ourselves and from nature that really is the, you know, the paradigm behind all of these actions.
Right. And it's just, again, it's just becoming acceptable. And you know, the reason we do this show is just, you know, as you know, is to educate and to say that it's not normal. You know, it's normal to be healthy.
Yeah,
it's normal to eat really good food like our grandparents did. That's what we need to get back to. But you know, those who want to listen will listen, and those who don't won't. So.
Yeah, and one thing to add to that is it's actually normal to not be afraid of our food. Like, I remember much younger years ago, before I switched over to real food, I was afraid of everything I fed my family. I was afraid I hadn't cooked it enough, or I was afraid that it was going to make them sick. And now that I've actually made the switch, I'm not afraid of that anymore. It's great because, you know, I am more connected, like Sally was just talking about. And I think a lot of people experience that, moms when they switch over to real foods, and maybe even people who aren't feeding lots of people, but just having that security and knowing where your food's coming from again, and just not having that fear. And it's not a normal part of feeding your family to be afraid of everything.
You know,
right.
This is slightly changing the subject, but one of our big themes is how important animal fats are, and especially butter is a really healthy fat. And you can't eat enough butter. I mean, you should eat as much butter as you want. And I've had people tell me that they had this tremendous sense of guilt to eat butter, and they had to get over that sense of guilt before they could eat butter. And so you see, when you hammer into people from a very early age, you know, constantly, butter's evil, and raw milk is dangerous, raw milk will kill you, you get very fearful people who are just sitting ducks for all the processed, you know, so-called low-fat foods.
Right. Well, I grew up on margarine and thinking, you know, Fleischmann's was the healthier route. And, you know, take a look at, you know, what people are finding out about margarines. I mean,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, it's changing the beliefs and changing the way of thinking and you know, we really are advocates for people to just be accountable for, you know, don't believe us. Don't believe anything we say on this show. You know, go do your own research. You know, take it into your own hands, you know. And when you start doing that, you're just amazed how much you can learn and how you can eat better and feel better.
Yeah, right.
So we're really, really excited to help promote this movie. It's just one other area that we feel is really important to get the word out, not only about some of the benefits of raw milk, but more importantly, it's about, you know, as we know, what's happening to our small family farms.
You know, one of the scenes from the movie there were several that were not about raw milk, and one was about a farm in Vermont where the USDA decided that all their sheep had to be killed because they had mad cow disease or scrapie. And, you know, this farm had worked with the USDA to import these sheep, and now USDA was going to kill all their sheep. USDA did. They came in and they just took all the sheep and took them off to be slaughtered, and there was nothing found in the tests before or after the slaughter. But the head of the department wanted to make a name for herself. And these people had no recourse. And some of these laws are written in such a way, especially the ones on animal health, that you have no recourse to expropriation of your animals. One of the things we fought very highly a few years ago was NAIS, National Animal Identification System. And that did go down in flames, but now USDA is talking about animal traceability, and it's really the same thing where every single animal has to be registered, and it gives the department the right to come in on and kill your animals on this mere suspicion that they might have some communicable disease. This is very scary. This is very scary for all small farmers.
Mm-hmm. Go
ahead.
No, go ahead, Susan.
Well, it just sounds like so many other laws have been enacted over the last years, several years, that really it's like before we were a country that was innocent until proven guilty, and now we're a country that's
guilty,
and then we have to prove our innocence.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And one of the other scenes in the movie was a co-op was raided by men in black suits and with guns drawn, and the thing they were raiding them for was a misdemeanor. You know, this is not even a felony, a misdemeanor. Now, we don't believe the co-op needed what they said it needed, but nevertheless, it was a misdemeanor, and yet they had this big SWAT team there to herd all the children into a room. And I mean, the family was completely traumatized by this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using these SWAT team fully armed techniques that they use on drug dealers. On people selling food, you know.
Right. It sounds like a movie. If the mafia goes in and they smash up the small business owner's staff or whoever it is, and you know, basically intimidate them into causing any trouble, so to speak.
Exactly.
That's really mafia
technique. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like don't make waves.
Yes,
And it's really ridiculous, and you know, we need to stand up and say no,
which is what
you're doing, and I applaud you for that. So we are going to take another commercial break. You are listening to Food Integrity Now, and we are talking about the new documentary, Farmageddon. We will be right back. Hello again, it's Carol. I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach, and I'd like to share with you an amazing adventure. I take groups on spiritual journeys to swim with the dolphins in the wild. If you'd like more information, please go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email me at carol@coachwithcarol.com. Mahalo. This is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Asyra bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We are talking with a couple of the folks from Farmageddon, Sally Fallon and Liz Reitzig. And, you know, I have a question. How can people get involved? You know, there may be people out there listening that, you know, they say, wow, well, what can I do? And how do you answer that question?
Well, I think Sally would agree with me on this. One of the most important things people can do is just look into it for themselves and start connecting directly with a local farmer, whether that's for pastured meats or a gallon of milk a week or whatever. Just make that connection. Start supporting a small local farmer.
Fight with your food dollars. Yeah,
exactly. And then on a whole nother level to all of that is then when and if something happens, whether to that farmer or to another farmer, get behind them, you know, do what it takes, help pay for their legal fees or host a dinner in their honor or just whatever it takes to really have the farmers feel supported, because without the support of customers really from across the country, our farmers are going to give up. They're just going to, they're going to sell their land. They're going to say it's easier to do something else.
I'll give you a very good example that just happened. It was a buyer's club in Kentucky, and they were it was a private club, and they were distributing raw milk and meat, pastured meat, and so forth and so on, eggs. And the health department came in and put big quarantine tapes over the coolers. So the not the director of the buying club, but the members of the buying club put up a sign-up sheet that said, this food belongs to me. I do not, this is a private club. I take full responsibility for what happens, and I am not honoring this quarantine. And they signed it, and then they took their food. And the health department then rescinded their cease and desist order. And this is unheard of. We've never heard of this happening before. But the support of the Buyers Club's members was so strong, and they could see what a terrible outcry they would have. They just gave up. So this is the kind of atmosphere that we are trying to create. Liz, through her lobbying, organizing, and the Weston A. Price Foundation with just teaching people about healthy foods, we want to make it impossible for them to discriminate against the small farmers to do these kinds of things that they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a bully who you know, acts intimidating until someone turns around and says, "No, we're not gonna be intimidated by you," and then they just back down. I think that might be the case here.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I also agree with Sally. Is we vote with our dollars.
Yes.
So
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. if you're supporting the local farmer, and you're not supporting, you know, big agra, you know, and supporting, you know, I thought there were more milk producers than four, but that really surprises me. It doesn't.
Well, they control 80% of the market. I mean, there are lots of small ones, but they don't contribute to a very large percentage of the market.
Right. So, and so, you know, do some research and find out, you know, where the small farmers are and, you know, join CSAs. That's another thing that we've talked about in this show. That's community-supported agriculture. And that's small local farms where you can buy a share and you get, you know, every week you get different vegetables and fruits. And it's just another way to, you know, to support local. And
when you say support local, you're really saying bypass the industrial. And that's what
right.
we want to do. We want to bypass the industrial food system. The Weston A. Price Foundation has chapters all over the country. And if you go to our website, WestonAPrice.org, you'll find a little thing that says click find your local chapter, and each local chapter keeps a resource list of how to obtain these kinds of foods in your area. So Liz, as a chapter leader, keeps a resource list, and we have chapter leaders all over the country, everywhere from Manhattan in New York to small villages in Nebraska.
Wow, that's exciting, and that's, you know, just another resource for people to, you know, find the local farmers.
That's right.
And
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about if people are looking for a farmer to get raw milk, or any small farmer, organic farmer, what kind of questions should they ask the farmer as to, you know, to ascertain the quality of the milk they might be getting?
The chapter leader should be able to provide you with that information. But
okay.
You want to know, are the cows fed on pasture? Is the dairy barn clean? Is the milk chilled down right away after milking? Is it stored in stainless steel? Do they have a sanitation procedures on the farm? How is it bottled? All that kind of thing. The key thing is actually keeping the milk cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is there are so many people that don't even know about, you know, for instance, raw milk, because they've been programmed
Goodbye.
To believe that you have to have pasteurization in order for it to be healthy.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the irony is, though, that every time FDA goes after somebody, this gets in the newspapers. Liz's example of Dan Allgaier, Liz organized a rally on Capitol Hill, and my goodness, did we get a lot of publicity from that. And every time we have an event like this or an incident, the number of people consuming raw milk goes up because people hear about it and say, oh, I want to get some of that. So,
yeah.
I mean, don't you think, weren't you pleased with the publicity you got, Liz?
Absolutely. And more to the point, pleased with the response, you know, keep more people because of that wanted to join the buying group.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, as farmers say it, they say, gosh, you know, I couldn't have bought better publicity. The FDA did it for me.
Yeah.
Do you know farmers that have just folded and said, forget it, this is too difficult, we don't want to go through this? I mean, has that happened in any of the instances with the raid?
There have been a few, but I think overall the number of new farms coming online is outpacing the farms that have gone out of business. And they do it for many reasons. Sometimes the farmer gets old and just wants to retire. You know, there might be some family issues. It's not just because they're being harassed.
Yeah, in particular, I was curious about, you know, any of the farms that were directly raided.
Well, the one that I mentioned about the sheep, they had to stop sheep farming. The Manna Storehouse, I don't think they're in business now. Some of the others still are in business, so some have managed and some have not.
Yeah. Well, the FDA is working hard at making sure that it's really difficult.
Yes, right. And the cheese makers that I mentioned, all three of those have stopped making cheese. Really a shame. And and in none of those cases did the cheese make anyone sick.
The bully won in that instance.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the future, what we're going to have to do is organize into private food clubs and private buying clubs, because I do think we have some very good legal precedents and to operate under that kind of legal umbrella.
Yeah. And is this more regulated at a state level or a federal level?
Well, it's a hodgepodge. Raw milk is regulated at the state level, but other foods are regulated by the FDA or USDA. And the new Food Safety Modernization Act gives the FDA a lot more power than it had before it could be interpreted to regulate in the state itself.
Yeah, I was reading some of the new rules, so to speak, with that Modernization Act, and it's like basically they can, if they just suspect something.
Yes, that's right. If they have a belief that something's unsanitary, they can quarantine the food for 30 days.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is the way that law was written. I mean, it was just a joke. It was like, this is really going to make your food safer, and we're gonna be able to regulate it more, and it just gave them more control.
And the big boys still just get warning letters, a little slap on the wrist. David Gumpert's blog gave a couple of examples recently. For the same kind of things that they used to shut down the three cheesemakers, the big boys, Kellogg's and so forth, are still in business.
Well, and I think it's important for a lot of the average American who wants to keep eating at Wendy's or wants to keep drinking soda, what's really important for them to realize is what their tax dollars are going for. And once they understand that their tax dollars are being used for undercover stings on Amish farms for supplying milk or to shut down somebody who just wants to be a shepherd in Vermont, I mean, once people realize that their hard-earned dollars are going for this, they get really pissed off. And that's another whole group of people to bring into this, and that's part of what Farmageddon was made for, so that just everybody can realize, you know, this is what our tax dollars are going towards in a budget crisis. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's outrageous, and it really does get people pissed off about it and willing to be in action either to support farmers or to come out against these actions on the part of the FDA.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, it's, you know, just, and I like what you said, Liz, about just getting people fired up, and it's just, you know, and maybe that's what it's going to take for a lot of people, is to just, you know, have them see how ridiculous this is and say no more.
But there has to be an uproar, and that's what we hope to create through education, through lobbying, through publicity. And I'd like to take my hat off to Kimberly Hartke, our publicist, and and others who worked with her, because she did a fabulous job of getting this into the press.
Yes, she did, and they called us to have you back on here too, which we were, you know, Sally, you've been on our show several times. We always like having you. And I know you're happy I'm not a vegan anymore. So
I very much am. Good, Carol.
I haven't gone to raw milk yet though, but I don't do any dairy right now. So a little butter. I do a little butter.
Oh, well, you can do all the butter you want and not feel guilty.
No, I don't really do it out of, it's not really guilt. I just love olive oil. So I use olive oil a lot. So anyway.
Well, one of the things we teach is how important the, you know, olive oil is fine and safe, but it doesn't contain the critical fat-soluble vitamins that you get in butter and other animal fats and whole raw milk.
Do you recommend organic butter?
Well, we recommend pasture-fed butter. In other words, find a farmer who's got his animals on pasture and is making butter.
Okay.
Good. I can totally back that up, because I wasn't eating butter for years and started eating pasture butter and noticed an almost immediate difference in my eyesight, which is odd. And but I think because of the high level of vitamin A, but also my immune system, I could feel it. It just, I got stronger almost within days of eating pasture butter. It's amazing stuff.
Good. Butter is the ideal fat. It's the fat that's designed to help the immune system in the growing infant and grow the brain and everything. It's got a perfect fatty acid profile. And if the cows are on pasture, it is just loaded with nutrition.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'll give it a try.
So, Carol, next time we talk, I'll be interested to know how much butter you're eating.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to overdo it, so don't get any expectations up there.
Well, but that's easy, because you can't overdo butter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been a wonderful show, and we really appreciate both of you and the work that you're doing. And, you know, this movie, I think, will be eye-opening to several folks and hopefully to some of our legislators.
Yeah,
and we
absolutely.
And we can get things turned around here. And, you know, if you're compelled to want to help, you know, we talked about that earlier, or just, you know, contact your local farmer and support your local farmer. And, you know, we need everyone. We need everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it starts with a small group of people, always.
Yeah.
Any big change that has ever happened starts with a small group of people. So thank you very much.
And thank you for having us, Carol, and everyone, and you know, you also keep up the good work. We need thousands of voices.
Yes, we do. And Liz, we appreciate you being on late at night with a 2-week old baby. So thank you again.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for your efforts in getting the word out about the movie.
You're welcome. And for our listeners, next week on our show, we are going to have two of the producers from the movie The Vanishing Bees, which is a very interesting documentary of what is happening to the honeybees and why they are disappearing. So we will be on at an earlier time next Tuesday. We're going to be on at 4 p.m. Mountain Time. We had to accommodate their schedule. So just tune into that show. Find us on Facebook, Food Integrity Now. And our website, again, is foodintegritynow.org. Thank you, Susan, for carrying the ball in the beginning of the show when I had a few technical difficulties. That's why we always have two of us on here.
That's right.
Yeah. So thanks again, and we will be on next week. This is Food Integrity Now, and stay healthy.